This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott. And if we got a great show for you tonight, no, we don't. Damn it, the phone is ringing again. That goddamn intern. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. Sam Kinison, wow. I thought you were dead. What's going on, man? Hey, Sam, I love you, man, but listen, we don't talk like that anymore. That's the way people talked in the 80s. You know, people just don't find that kind of language funny. It's hurtful. We've evolved. Times have changed. We've made progress. What do you mean you don't call walking around and staring at your phone all day and listening to shitty rock and roll podcast progress? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? Speak English or Die by SOD? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Speak English or Die by crossover thrash pioneers SOD. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
What's up, music nerds? Are you tired of wading through a sea of mediocre music, desperately seeking to find a glimmer of greatness? You're in luck. My name is Mark, and I am the host of the podcast, Songs That Don't Suck. Each week, I scour the depths of new music playlists to unearth hidden gems that defy the trends and deliver pure sonic bliss. No matter the genre, if it doesn't suck, it's on my radar. So find us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today. And as always, keep searching for and listening to Songs That Don't Suck.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter on the line. Rico, good news. How are you, sir?
Man, I'm doing pretty freaking great. How are you tonight?
Tired, dude. This is going to be a punch the clock episode if there ever was one. So, ladies and germs, you're in for a real treat tonight as you listen to me completely mail it in.
Are you, real quick, are you still sore from moving those couches? I didn't
know. No, that's past, but
okay,
you know,
we had a little adventure with Scott's couches the other night. That's way too long of a story, though, but it was fun. We had a good time with it. Anyways, let's get started with some news. So Spotify has a new feature called Song Psychic. Let me tell you how this works, Scott. So when you're in there and you're in Spotify and you're trying to get your jam on or your podcast or whatever it is that you're doing in Spotify, you could randomly get a pop-up that shows some like cool little symbols or whatever, and it says something like, life's full of little mysteries, and sometimes the most fun way to tackle them is with a bit of cosmic guidance. This is called Song Psychic, by the way. Spotify is ready to take you, Scott, on a journey of enlightenment with Song Psychic, a new mystical music experience. So what happens is, after you click get started, you get taken to, now mind you, you're trying to play a song because you're working out or you're walking Bolty or whatever you're doing and you just want to listen to some music. So you decide to take a little sidestep with this. So it takes you to another page that you get like 9 different prompts that you get to choose from, or you can hit another one that says ask me, and the categories are school, friends, family, love, career, life's greatest mysteries, my future, myself, style, and lunch. And what happens is, after you select one of these options, you can you are the individual, you're either presented with a question that you can submit, or they're prompted to type in a question related to the subject. And what'll happen is, then Spotify, whether they present a question to you or whether you ask a question, the answer comes in a song. So they will answer your question with a particular song. So this is using some type of AI algorithm or whatever to try and make a cool little user experience. And so Spotify has said that since they started doing this, listeners have created over 250,000 quote unquote psychic related playlists on app with this cool little feature where they've incorporated AI into their user experience, Scott. So now you get to have songs presented to you as answers to all of your life's questions.
I hate it. I'm going to go buy a CD player.
Yeah, that's spooky as fuck, isn't it?
It's not just spooky. It's just fucking, it's not, I mean, listen, apparently I'm in the minority. Everybody seems to love it, whatever. But that's not why I'm using Spotify. I just want to listen to what I want to listen to and have it available to me. That's all. You know, I don't want it to make decisions for me. I don't even like it recommending playlists for me. The little feature where I don't like listening to playlists. I'm still kind of like a deep dive album guy or deep dive single artist guy. And so I just, even those little features they put in the front where they're like, they recommend you, like, here's your 80s metal playlist. I'm like, I don't want to listen to that.
I can't stand that, dude. The one thing, if there's nothing that I hate, I can't stand when you, and this is the same for YouTube too. This is why, one of the reasons I hate YouTube and services like this with this stupid algorithm, because you go down a rabbit hole and maybe you listen to a couple of, you listen to a couple of Johnny Cash songs just because it tickles your fancy. So now all of a sudden you've got all kinds of that related material that they just put in front of you and you don't have a choice. And I can't stand that. And the first thing I want to do is just clear my algorithm every time that happens. I want to be able to just go down a rabbit hole for a second, but then I want to come right back out of the rabbit hole, and I don't want to spend the next 4 hours trying to dig myself out of country music that because I listen to one or two Johnny Cash songs. There's nothing that irritates me more than those algorithmically generated suggestions that you can't get out of. I hate that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree totally. I think you're totally right, man. Yeah, I don't want, what was it I was listening to the other day? Was I listening to Miles Davis? I was just listening to jazz for whatever reason, man. I'm not that musically intellectual. So, I mean, I was just experimenting, just trying some different things, you know?
Right.
But I, to your point, if I decide to do that, I don't want YouTube then assuming that that defines my personality and just sending me more and more of it. No, I just, you know, please continue sending me the Blackie Lawless videos. Disregard the fact that I listened to, you know, Davis for a little bit.
Yeah, more Ace Frehley and less Miles Davis.
Thank you.
Do you, real quick, I don't want to get too much on this. Do you remember what Miles Davis you were listening to?
I don't. I was watching something. It was like an old, I don't know whether it was like a Dick Cavett interview with him or something. And he just looked like crazy, angry, and mean. And I was reading just how cantankerous he was, allegedly. Oh, yeah. And
for sure.
And, you know, I watch these goofy shows on YouTube where they're always like ranking albums and stuff. And this guy had recommended one, and I can't even remember the name of it. And actually, I don't even think I found the one that the guy recommended in the YouTube video. So, because I think he was holding it up and he was like, this was death metal before death metal. Like when people heard this back in the day, it was like unlistenable. And I thought, oh, I want to listen to that and hear what that sounds like.
Oh, he's talking about the one from the early 70s. His real fame. I can't freaking, the guy I work with is going to kill me for not remember. And it's that one. And I don't remember the name of, I've listened to that album and he's right. If you, that one's not an easy listen, but if I may be allowed to make a suggestion for you and anybody else out there who is wanting to hit a really amazing Miles Davis album, it's called Sketches of Spain. The album is Yellow and Red. It's really easy to pick out. Sketches of Spain is it's a life-changing experience when you listen to this album. It's really freaking, it's crazy. This is the album that what's her face from Jefferson Airplane, what the hell's her name?
Oh, I don't remember her name.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
The lead singer?
Yeah.
Yeah, was it Gladys something? I don't remember.
Well, I can't remember. Anyway, this is the album.
Because you don't remember because it's 2024 and you're talking about Jefferson Airplane.
No, I know, but the point is the story is that she was tripping on LSD listening to Sketches of Spain, which gave her the idea of writing the song White Rabbit. So, Scott... and anybody else out there, please go out of your way to listen to Sketches of Spain because it's a, again, it's a life-changing experience. It's amazing. It's, do you know how many, let me ask you this, Scott, moving along, how many people outside of guitar world know who Bob Heil is? I didn't know who he was either, but I felt the need to discuss this because of a specific reason.
Grace Slick, is that the name you're after?
That's it, Grace Slick. That's it.
The devotion to accuracy department prompted me to look this up. Internet age now, so people will fact check us in real time when they listen for to sure. the podcast.
Yeah, I feel dumb that I couldn't remember her name, but yeah, it was Grace Slick.
Anyway, your question?
Yeah, how many people do you think know, outside of like the inner guitar circles, know who Bob Heil is? Probably not that many. Small. Right? I didn't know who he was. Anyway, he invented the talk box and he died. He was 83 years old. So he invented the talk box. I love the talk box. If anybody doesn't know what a talk box is, you might remember the song Do You Feel Like I Do by Peter Frampton, or the beginning part to Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi. What are some other famous talk box songs that you can think of?
Sweet Emotion, right?
Sweet, yeah, I believe so. Joe Walsh, the Joe Walsh song.
Yeah, yeah.
Rocky Mountain Way. That's a classic talk box song. Do you think the talk box is a lost art? Nobody uses that thing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I've never even seen one in person. I mean, I put my wah-wah pedal in my mouth once or twice, but never did anything. Just tasted like my shoe.
The whole concept of a talk box is pretty fucking clever, actually. For anybody that doesn't know how that works, you have like a vinyl tube that comes out of this little amplifier, for lack of a better term. So you play your guitar through this little amplifier box, and instead of the sound going to your amp, the sound goes through this little vinyl tube, and in which the end of the tube is in your mouth. And so the sound is coming out of your mouth into the microphone. And so you can modulate the sound by opening and closing your mouth, and that's how a talk box works. I don't know how the hell he thought of that, but that's one of my favorite effects, like that and the phaser effect and the phaser slash flange effect. Those are my three favorite guitar effects. And I think the talk box is such an amazing invention, and it's such a cool thing that I'm kind of disappointed that people don't use it anymore. I think you could still do a lot with that.
I have a talk box weird talk box memory, but there's a I've always liked, like, almost better than the content itself, I like reviews. Like, I always loved watching Siskel and Ebert. Even if I didn't see the four movies they were talking about, I love the show.
Yeah.
And I like if you listen to sports talk, it's almost like you listen to the review of the game. To me, it's almost more entertaining than the game itself, right? And I still buy, I mean, I have like a collection of like review books for like record albums and movies. And I just like to thumb through them and grab a page and read a bunch of record reviews. I just think they're fun. Well, there's one that's been, and this will relate to a talk box in a minute. There's one that sticks in my brain that is like the white whale to me that I want to find. And I've spent time scouring online, but I cannot find it. And it is the Guitar World review of Load by Metallica from 1996. And the illustration was they made James and Kirk into Beavis and Butthead. And they absolutely destroyed the album. And they said, this is like, and they, I mean, they really ripped it for, and we later on will have a category called Wanton Whiteness. They literally ripped it. Cause remember, this was Metallica being quote bluesy, and they ripped it for how stiff and the blues was and white and without feeling. And I mean, they just laid into and took this album to pieces. And I've been looking for this review online for years cause I want to read it again. But, one thing they rip them for is there's a song on that record called The House That Jack Built, and James plays a guitar solo on it. He uses a talk box and they really just lay into how soulless the playing of the boys in Metallica is, even when they try to use tools like a talk box, for instance, that might allow you to be a little funky or to you know,
I can't imagine. I mean, what Metallica trying to do anything bluesy is a really bad idea. I wonder how they actually thought that they could get those guys are so fucking stiff. Like, that's the antithesis in every way that you would need to be to even try to pull off anything bluesy. I can't imagine what they were thinking at the time. I mean, right? I mean,
so I'll tie this back to jazz.
Yeah.
And then I'll let you move on with your news. But Lars Ulrich's dad died in December. And it was, I think his name was Torben. And he was a eclectic hippie dude who lived into his 90s. And he was a pro tennis player, but he was also a I think he was like a jazz critic. Like, he curated jazz records and reviewed them, I think. And when Lars first formed Metallica and played it for his dad's review was, it's a little white. And and Lars said that he used to always like tell him, like, you know, and he would give him like honest critique. He's got a famous scene in Some Kind of Monster where he's listening to an early demo of a track and tells Lars just to delete it. And
oh my God.
But it was this idea of like coming from someone who was schooled in jazz that music like Metallica or heavy metal just lacked any kind of soul whatsoever. So a little bit of a callback.
That's insanity. Well, anyways, RIP Bob Heil. You invented a really fantastic little gadget there with the talk box. And if anybody out there can help my boy Scott out here with that article, maybe somebody knows where they can find it. Send us an email or somehow get a hold of us on social media. I agree with you. I personally would love to see that article, and I know you would too. So if anybody knows where we can get a hold of a copy, that'd be great. At any rate, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about Sergeant D and the boys. So stick around.
Looking for a good rock and roll book? Do you watch a ton of rock and roll documentaries like I do? Well, that's why I started the Rock Talk Studio podcast, to be the place to go for previews, reviews, and recommendations of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies. Every first Tuesday of the month, the Rock Talk Studio gets you caught up on all the latest and points out where to go for the good stuff. Give me 20 minutes and I'll get you caught up on the world of rock and roll books, docs, and movies from every possible angle and leave you with a no-doubt decision on where to spend your time and money. Fan or just casual fan, or maybe you're on the fence and just looking for something new to check out, either way, I got you covered. Recently on the show, I've talked about books and documentaries from everyone and everything from David Bowie, Randy Rhoads, and the Allman Brothers, to the Abbey Road Studios, Cheap Trick, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Little Richard, and more. Join me, Big Rick, every Tuesday of the month as I host the Rock Talk Studio podcast, the ultimate review of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies.
Our Mind on Music is a podcast that covers all things music. We cover all genres and we welcome all perspectives, from musicians, producers, and content creators to music enthusiasts. We have discussions, interviews, opinions, and much, much more. We hope you'll join us every week, Our Mind on Music, on YouTube and all streaming platforms.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted unto the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm. A sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
Hey, welcome back. Before we get into this, I just want to say thanks to everybody for listening. You know, when we've said this before, when we started doing this, you know, we were just happy to have a listen. And so when we say thanks for listening, like, we're not just spitting that out, like, we really genuinely mean it. So just wanted to let you guys know that anybody that tunes in to listen is very, very much appreciated. So having said that, this is Speak English or Die, Scott, by Stormtroopers of Death. Scott Ian's little side hustle that wound up being way more impactful than they imagined. So this was 1985, recorded 1985. This is the magical melding together of hardcore punk and thrash metal, Scott, that maybe we'll touch on. Megaforce is the record. Scott Ian and the boys took care of it. Alex Perialis helped produce it. And we'll get into the rest, but this is Speak English or Die, Scott. But did it kill rock? I don't fucking know. Why don't we find out?
Thank you, Rico. Yes, sir. It is SOD, the Stormtroopers of Death. Speak English or Die. This kind of like falls into this world of, like, I think of bands like, what was the band that did the Three Little Pigs song, the Green Jello?
Green started out as Green Jello, but then they had to change their name So they changed it to green jelly. You're correct.
Yeah. These, and I guess you could almost put, we did a few episodes back, we did Scatterbrain, you know, these kind of like humorous kind of bands that live in like the metal community, I guess. I've definitely tossed these guys in there. Did it kill rock and roll? Well, we got to find out, man. This song's like, what, a minute and a half long, something like that? I mean, it seems like we're putting a lot on it. If you could kill rock and roll in what is it, 2 minutes and 24 seconds.
Yeah. If you blink, you'll miss the song. So you got to really, you got to be paying attention when it comes out.
Oh my goodness. Well, how do we find out if a song killed rock and roll? Well, the answer is we've developed proprietary science to help us arrive at that stunning conclusion. And it consists of five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, the band is the on-again, off-again, crossover, thrash, side project, SOD, Stormtroopers of Death, the album, Speak English or Die, the track, Speak English or Die, the category is gratuitous boomerism. Sir, how do you score?
When you, hardcore punk, okay, hardcore punk and the like, and you can obviously you'd be able to speak more on this than I can, but hardcore punk is like one of those things where they went out of their way, and this song is a perfect example of how in that style of music people go out of their way to piss somebody off because they think it's funny, or to just to get underneath somebody's skin, just to get underneath somebody's skin. Maybe they don't mean it personally, they probably don't a lot of times. Like this song and this whole album and is really meant to be silly and stupid and just a bunch of hardcore rock metal heads acting like idiots. But having said that, that kind of shit doesn't fly anymore, man. You can't, you whether it's all in good fun or not, like this shit clearly documented a million times that this was never meant personally on anyone. They were just idiots being idiots, kind of like us every week. But it's never meant, it was never meant to be taken personally. But this stuff died a painful death, and you cannot, you can't do, I'm going to say unfortunately, because sometimes people need to lighten the hell up, but unfortunately you can't do this kind of stuff anymore. I'm going to give it a plus one for gratuitous boomerism, even though I don't know if any of them actually are boomers or not, but in the case of this style of song making, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, Billy Milano, born in 64, so, excuse me, just a late boomer. Scott Ian also, I think he is, what, 63, so he's also a late boomer. So these guys just missed kind of getting in early as Gen Xers. I think Charlie Benante as well, and Dan, was it Loker or Liker? I don't know how you say his last name.
I had to look at it. It's Loker, I think. Loker? Yeah.
So, yeah, these guys are all, like, right on the cusp of Boomer, Gen X, but all still kind of firmly ensconced in Boomerdom if Gen X does, in fact, begin in 65. So, so I'm going to give it a plus one as well, because I think that, and I'll kind of give my thoughts as the podcast progresses, but it's hard for me to really say, well, hardcore or crossover hardcore punk thrash, to think of that in a boomer way. But so I'm kind of setting the music aside, because the music feels like it could have been Helmet in the 90s, you know what I mean? It's just a certain New York hardcore sound is what it has, but but I'm just going to kind of live with the lyrics here. And as far as the message goes and the age of the gentlemen who populate the band, it's a plus one for gratuitous boomerism.
Got it.
All right, let's move on to our second category. It is excessive misogyny. And Rico, I have the lyrics available if you need them.
Please hit me with some spoken word.
All right. And listen, anybody, I've seen the analytics on this podcast, so I don't think I need to give a trigger warning for the 60 somethings listening to this show, but
I hope not by this. We're like almost a buck 20 in episode wise. So yeah. I think people would realize that by now.
Yeah. But if you happen to be in like high school listening, I'll give you a trigger warning. This is
have some younger people. So just, you know, watch where you're listening to this.
Yeah. This is what the world sounded like in the 80s.
Yeah.
You come into this country, you can't get real jobs. Boats and boats and boats of you. Go home, you fucking slobs. Selling hot dogs on the corner, selling papers in the street, pushing, pulling, digging, sweating. Where you come from must be beat. You always make us wait. You are the ones we hate. You can't communicate. Speak English or die. I got to read all of it, Rico. I'm sorry.
Do it, man. Do it. You're on a roll.
You don't know what I want. You don't know what I need. Why must I repeat myself? Can't you fucking read? Nice fucking accent. Why can't you speak like me? What's that? Okay, gang, I'm going to read this out loud. I'm just reading the lyrics. This doesn't reflect on me. What's that dot on your head? Do you use it to see? You always make us wait. You are the ones we hate. You can't communicate. Speak English or die. Oh, Billy Milano sang that at one point. Sergeant D himself.
So I think I read that when Scott Ian, this whole thing apparently started when Scott Ian started drawing the character Sergeant D. And so I think, if I were to put two and two together, I would think that this album is being spoken as if it was being spoken from the character Sergeant D and not from any of the guys in the band. So it's like Sergeant D is the guy who's actually singing these songs and not any of the people. And so that might help you work through it a little bit even more, maybe. But as far as excessive misogyny, Scott, it's a zero science because there's no misogyny in the lyrics. However, there's other things there, like the dot comment, man. I was surprised when I heard the dot comment and wasn't expecting that. But you know what, dude, I hate to say it, but back in the 80s when people thought different, let me ask you a question. Actually, do you think that back in the 80s, if you were listening to this, you would know that these are just a bunch of idiots just trying to be dumb? Or were people taking this seriously, or did they realize that it was just people just trying to have fun with a character?
I actually want to talk. Well, I'll answer your question. I don't think people, because I was among the group listening to this in the 80s, and I never once thought, oh, that's the SOD, that's Sergeant D speaking this song. I never once thought that at all. But I think, though, that, and I'll talk about this in other categories, but I do think, though, that even though I didn't think that this was an account of the feelings of one Sergeant D, I also understood that it was absolutely ridiculous what I was listening to. So I knew that as well. Yeah. I knew that like another band similar to this would be like Gwar. And I know when I listen to Gwar and the lyrics are purposely absurd. So I know that. Yeah. But it's a zero for me as well. I mean, there isn't any excessive misogyny to be found here. To your point, there are other things, but not that.
Right.
Let's move on to category three. Wanton whiteness. Speak English or die. SOD. Rico, what say you?
I mean, there's nothing whiter than hardcore punk, in my opinion. There's nothing whiter than thrash. And when you put them together, like white plus white equals whiter. So we've talked about this before. The only gosh, the only I can only think of the band that's called Death that they had the documentary. I've mentioned them before. They were black. I think they were out of Detroit. I think I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, they're Detroit.
The only other band that I could maybe attach to punk at all is Fishbone, and they were really more ska. And they did some heavier stuff, but they were really more ska. But other than Fishbone, maybe you could attach to punk and Death. They were the only two bands with black people in them that remotely did this kind of stuff. It's 99.99999 cracker ass white bread stuff. So for sure, this is obviously a one for me.
Yeah, I would add there's another one in there that I think Bad Brains I would probably fit in there as well.
Right.
There was in thrash. Thrash is kind of interesting, is I think because so much of it originated in California, is that you did get like, you know, Colombian and Cuban people in a lot of those thrash bands. You know, like I think Dave Lombardo's from Cuba, and I think I think Tom Araya is like, is he Colombian? I can't remember.
Hey, Suicidal Tendencies. We talked about them. They had some diversity.
Yeah.
In their band.
Yeah. I think it's just because it's California. This is so much more diverse, but this is East Coast stuff here. But I think Wanton Whiteness. Yeah. I agree 100%. It's a big, big, big plus one. And this is where you look at the lyrics. I mean, I think, I guess it's either going to be Here or Malignant Machismo, but Rico, if you cast your mind back to the 80s, everything in the 80s was, and we see this in time, every decade is kind of a reaction to the previous decade, you know, and every generation is kind of a reaction and a snapback from the previous generation. The 80s are coming out of a tumultuous window of time in the country. You had the 60s, you had the counterculture movement, you had war, you had civil rights, you had a decade of protests and assassinations. Then you go into the 70s and you have more war, free love. Think of like Studio 54. You have, people are fairly promiscuous. You have an energy crisis. You have an economic downturn. You have Watergate, right? And so, like, you're coming off of like two decades of just turmoil in America, you know?
Yeah.
And so the 80s, as a response to that, embraced conservatism and almost like a desire to get back to that mythological 1950s America of the white picket fence, Leave It to Beaver kind of thing, you know? And that's what kind of like the world promised politically, you know, in the 80s. And it almost became like fashionable, and this is where I'll make my point, is it almost became fashionable to be angry towards, like, if you think of like Family Ties with Alex P. Keaton, was the parents were hippies who are now parents. They've grown up. And then their son is a Reagan loving conservative who has a framed picture of Ronald Reagan in his living room. And that's Michael J. Fox. This is the most beloved character in America in the 1980s, is Alex P. Keaton. And he's the exact opposite of, he's a stuffy, want to get good grades, go to the best college, loves Ronald Reagan, conservative, and his parents are the hippies. And the entire gag of the show is him making fun of how uncool his parents who protested the Vietnam War were. And that's the entire gag of the show.
Yeah.
And so this mentality permeated American culture in the 80s, and it manifested itself in comedians like Sam Kinison, who were intentionally offensive and outrageous. And if you listen to some of his comedy bits now, they're not far from the lyrics to this song. Go listen to the one about him talking about sending U-Hauls to the desert because they should live where the food is.
Where the food is. Yep.
Yeah.
That's his most famous bit, right?
Yeah. You don't feed the Ethiopians. Instead, you get them that, you know, it's sand. Food will never grow here.
Yeah.
Right. Remember Morton Downey Jr.?
Oh, Christ. Yes. Jesus.
So if you look at old footage, pull up old footage of Morton Downey Jr. on YouTube, and you'll see like metalheads in the audience. You really will. And yeah, people embraced this aggressive, angry conservatism that was openly lashing out at the values of 1960s and 70s liberalism. And it actually was mainstream. It was like a mainstream thing, you know? And then of course the 90s were a total backlash against that, you know, politically and culturally and everything. Yep. So what Scott Ian and the gang are doing here, and you hear in Anthrax songs, Sam Kinison is in I'm the Man by Anthrax. You hear him scream. Morton Downey Jr., Sam Kinison, like hyper aggressive, angry conservatism that you're hearing in a song like Speak English or Die, you know, it's all right there. It all lines up. This was the fashion back then. Think of the movies, Top Gun. I mean, everything was as patriotic and, you know, Rambo. I mean, it was just as over the top nationalistic as you could possibly get, right? Because we wanted to forget about the dark days of the 60s and 70s and all the turmoil. So let's just embrace the red, white, and blue. Let's embrace being white people with white picket fences, right?
So yeah, man. And if you weren't part of those cliques, they became very cliquey. And if you weren't in any of those ultra conservative cliquey circles, then there was zero tolerance for you. And you may as well be the gum on the bottom of somebody's shoe. It was really that, to that degree.
Yeah, I mean, the attitude, even with like, I mean, there's those famous clips of like Reagan, I mean, with the AIDS crisis, I mean, they weren't taking it seriously because it was just affecting, quote unquote, the homosexual community. So who cares, right? It's that was the kind of like aggressive, like conservatism that was at work in the 1980s, which was just a total backlash. And that's what this is a reflection of. And the funny thing was, is I never saw it that way until years later. I used to love Morton Downey Jr. I would watch him at night and I would just think it was great that he would get in front of people's faces and just spit all over them and yell at them and call them pablum puking scum. And that was like, that was a part of the vernacular. I would go to school quoting that crap back then.
I know. I mean, Jesus, I completely forgot about that guy. Yeah, that guy was like the caricature of that movement in the 80s. Like,
it was
insanity. Yeah. Funny to look back on, but it's craziness.
It really is. And it's like how much the world has changed, right? And we don't use this. There's so much language that was commonplace that was used every day in the playground growing up. That's just, we just don't say those things anymore. It's not acceptable. So this band, it's a representation of, it's not just this song. You just read the lyrics of the whole record. It's literally track by track. It's a representation of something that just doesn't exist anymore.
Very true. Very true.
All right, let's move on. Malignant Machismo, Speak English or Die. Rico, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, everything that you just said, in addition to that, you know, hardcore punk and thrash are very aggressive music stylings. And, you know, just for the music styling alone is a plus one. But when you throw in the very colorful lyrics, you know, that obviously adds to it. If I could give it higher than a one on this, this goes beyond Hetfield stance, in my opinion. But I can only go as high as a one. Obviously this is, you know, Captain Obvious stuff here. So it's going to get a one for me for sure.
Yeah. It's a big plus one. I mean, what could be more macho and, than threatening people trying to make a living and come to America for a better life and a shot at the American dream and then just shitting all over that. I mean, what,
yeah.
You know, so I mean, you're just not welcome here and Speak English or Die, you know? So it's like, these are people who, you know,
do you,
I mean,
think at least any of those people that come over here, like with this really romantic version of the American dream, and then they come over here and get shit on, do you think that they try and push through that and hold on to their romantic American dream? Or do you think they actually like are questioning themselves, like, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, you know what I'm like, it would be really easy to cash that in and be like, I'm coming over here to try to you know, evolve my life and I'm getting shit on while I'm over here. Does that dream really exist? Am I being stupid? Do you think these people question themselves about that, or do you think they try and push through?
No, I think that's probably, I think it would be natural for anyone to second guess life choices that they've made, especially if they come here and encounter like racism, you know? But having said that, I mean, I think it's a fact that like the vast majority of Americans don't have passports, never leave the country, never experience other cultures. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, we have a pretty good standard of living here in this country, even if you're poor. And for all the faults that we have in this country, I mean, our poor people still have like Netflix and iPhones, you know what I mean? And so it's like, we have a pretty good standard of living. And I think that people who come from other countries where maybe there's some genuine hardship, that when they come here, they're willing to fight through it because they've actually experienced things that people in this country are just angry without any real knowledge from which to base it on, because they just spend their whole lives living in Akron, Ohio. Who am I talking
about? Other people experience real hardships, like barely having food to eat, let alone having, you know, you're getting assistance from the government and you're walking around with your cell phone watching Netflix.
Right.
So that's not actual hardship. That's perceived hardship. Whereas these people that are coming over here to try and have a better life have real hardship, like finding out how they're going to put a spoonful of food in their kid's mouth and somehow finding a way over here to try and make that two or three spoonfuls instead of just one or zero.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like, I think that's totally it. So if they have to put up with some asshole and some band called SOD, they'll do it. All right. Let's move on to our final category. Yeah. Culture vulturism, SOD, speak English or die. Rico, what say you?
Culture vulturism. So I'm probably, man, see, this is hard because this album really gets praised for being like almost inventing hardcore thrash and this new crossover genre. So, but they're kind of in, but really the way I see it is they're just using what was already there and just, I don't know, this is hard. I'm going to have to split the difference. A part of me wants to go a full one because essentially this is most of everybody from Anthrax just playing like Anthrax. With just somebody with a hardcore punk singer. So I kind of want to give him a one for that, but I feel like I should dial it down to a half a point simply because, yes, this album was kind of like a lightning in the bottle moment. This was a side hustle that was just a side hustle that these guys got together to do something fun, and it wound up blowing up, and this album wound up being a lot huger than probably they ever anticipated. And so because it was such a lightning in the bottle moment, I've got to dial it down and we'll reward them a little bit and just give them a half a point.
Yeah, I think I feel the same way. I would give them a half a point as well. I mean, I think there are elements of it that are kind of, I guess, trendsetting or groundbreaking. It did surprise everybody with the popularity, but I think the popularity was mostly attributed to the abrasiveness of the lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, it's something else. Just one other point about the 80s is I hear this a lot about people today who look back and they're like, well, how could you ever treat people the way, you know, like you look at, like, you know, today we're way more accepting of, like, back then people, if you were gay, you had to stay in the closet, you know what I mean? Or you had to leave if you grew up in a small town, you had to leave to go be who you are. You know, it's just the society was so much different, right? And people today would look back and say, well, you know, how could you ever treat people that way? You know, and like, I can't answer it. I was a kid at the time, but you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think even with these lyrics and a lot of that, like, really offensive stuff, people always look back at the 80s and they're like, oh man, that stuff was so misogynistic or so offensive. And it's like, I think we knew it was offensive back then. And that was the point, was that it was offensive. You knew it. What's that?
Yeah. No, I was just echoing. Yeah, they knew it was offensive, and so that they said it because it was offensive.
Right. Inappropriateness was the point. So you weren't trying to avoid being inappropriate. You were tackling it head on and embracing inappropriateness. So you have to remember, this is like the era of the PMRC, the Christian Moral Majority at the time, you know, Jimmy Swaggart, Pat Robertson, all those guys were really kind of coming into the forefront. So there was this kind of like morality, satanic panic kind of thing going on. And so you would purposely, just to push the envelope, try to be as outrageous and inappropriate as possible and embrace it. And so it wasn't like people were so ignorant that they didn't realize they were being inappropriate. It's actually the opposite. The stuff was just as inappropriate back then, but people just went for it to push the envelope. Would you agree with that?
I think that's a fantastic point. I mean, what you have there is a multi-layered discussion, because on one hand, to answer your question where somebody says, you know, how could people talk like that to other people? And how could, you know, how could people have such an intolerant view of other ways that aren't their own? And the best way I could answer this, because I also grew up in the 80s, and this is the best way I can describe this. Let's pretend that you're on a planet and all you ever know is vanilla ice cream. You grow up with vanilla ice cream, and once you become coherent with life, all you know is vanilla ice cream. And so you just keep eating vanilla ice cream because that's what you do, because that's all you know. But then eventually things change and you discover that there are other flavors of ice cream that maybe are better than vanilla ice cream, but you didn't know that because all you ever knew was one thing. And so maybe that's not the best way to describe it, but when you're growing up in that era, by the time you get old enough to understand life, like I was, by the time I hit double digits, it was like 1981 when I hit double digits. And by the time you're a teenager and start becoming aware of things, like you only know one way. You by the time you're aware of something, that's when Sam Kinison's on television and that's when these songs are being made. And so you don't know any other way. And so it's not like it's good or bad. It's just, that's just the way things are. I don't know if that is a better, I don't know if that's a good way to answer that type of a question. But to your other point, yeah, that's, I think a lot of this with especially albums like this one was a direct response to the PMRC and all of that moral conservatism and the satanic panic, because that still existed during all of this. And the PMRC was right on the heels of this. And I think stuff like this was a mixture of that's all we knew, but I think a lot of it was exactly what you said. A lot of it was purposefully created as offensive as possible in order to dig at the satanic panic people and the Christian moralists and all that other stuff, done complete, and they would go as dirty and offensive as possible to counteract what they thought was absolutely ridiculous in the PMRC type of stuff. So I don't know if that helped, but that's the best way I could answer that first question.
No, I think that's spot on. And I think it started with like Lenny Bruce in the 60s, where comedians started pushing the envelope, and then Richard Pryor, Red Fox, and then you go right on down the line, and then it permeated into music. And then by 1990s, you had gangster rap. And I think that was like the last kind of like where the bubble kind of burst at that point. You know what I mean? It was like when you got to like basically Body Counts, Cop Killer, I think was like where you could actually market with that song is where where it finally, where the bubble kind of finally burst. And then like the kind of like purposeful offensiveness of music started going back the other direction.
Yep. That's a fact.
All right, Rico, so I'm going to add up my scores here for this rock and roll autopsy and find out if Speak English or Die killed rock and roll. So I've got 1, 2, 3. All right. I've got 3.5 points.
And I've got, let's see, 8, 59, 32 divided by 8. I also have 3.5 points. 3.5 for me.
You ready?
Yep.
For a grand total of...
That's 7.0. So, yeah, I think we said 7 kills Rock, dude. So, it killed Rock, obviously. That's where it ought to be. This whole album, I understand why it was made. And from a certain point of view, it's an entertaining, well done album from a certain point of view. But on the other hand, again, dude, this shit doesn't fly anymore. And it's very dated. And science wins.
Yeah. Super dated. Rico, I struggled to read the lyrics. I mean, every once in a while you get a song on here where I actually have to like pause and tell people, yeah, I'm just reading the lyrics.
Yeah. Where I'm like, when it's playing on Spotify and I'm reading the lyrics, I see, because this is the first time that I listened to any of these songs on this album was for this podcast. Like, that's how out of the loop I am on this album. And so I'm watching the lyrics as it's scrolling and I'm like, man, I can't believe this shit. Like, I actually, I actually was reacting to it.
Right.
And it was bizarre, actually.
But if you saw it in the 1980s, you wouldn't have thought anything of it. But
nope. Probably would
have
laughed.
The world has changed and you've evolved with it and you're seeing, yep, it for the first time and you're like, holy shit, how could they get away with that?
Yeah, that's right. And that's exactly true, man. If I were to listen to this back in the 80s, like with some of our friends like BM, who is a big metalhead, like we probably would have laughed at this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's just dumb. Yeah.
But it's just, things change over time and it's way different now than it was back then.
Yeah, and it's also like clearly has like an expiration date. I mean, this is stuff like only 14-year-old boys had listened to. This has like, there's no desire for me to like give this a shot, you know, like or to spin this for like, you know, just to enjoy it as a grown ass man. This is just dumb shit.
Precisely.
All right, gang. Thanks for tuning in to Rock and Roll Autopsy. Rico, I'm exhausted, man. It's been a long day. I'm going to hit the hay. Me too.
Hey, get some rest, my man.
Thanks, dude. Take care. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah.
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
To the dawn, love it, hey, to the morning. I'm gone. I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit battleofthebandspod.com.